the director's report. Director Anderson?
Good morning, everyone. As usual, I have a number of topics that I'll speak to and report on here this morning. And they're not in any particular order relative to priority, so all of them, I think, have a high degree of importance. First one is federal duck stamp. The House and Senate have passed legislation that would raise the cost of a federal duck stamp from $15 to $25. And this was largely championed by waterfowl hunters and other conservation organizations. And the addition to the cost of the duck stamp would primarily be used to obtain conservation easements to preserve important waterfowl habitat within the United States. So it hasn't been signed by the president yet that I know of, unless he did it in the last 24 hours. But we're expecting that to occur. Next up is a new promotion that we did within the department. Mick Cope was recently chosen as our new game division manager. Mick's been with the department for a number of years and has worked through a number of different positions. He originally obtained his degree from Pacific University and later went on with a master's in fish and wildlife at Montana State University. We were fortunate to have a fairly wide field of candidates that not only from this state but other states as well. But we're really happy about having Mick in this position. He'll be leaving his current position January 15th. He's currently the wildlife program manager in Region 6 down Montesano. He'll be starting his new position on the 16th. In the interim, Jeff Skrillitz will be taking on his duties as Regional 6 Wildlife Program Manager until we begin that recruitment and get that position filled. So congratulations to Mick. And I think you also know that we recently created a wolf policy lead, and Dave Ware is going to assume that position. So after, I think, 17 years as our game division manager, and want to thank Dave very much for his work as game division manager during that period of time. Dave's going to take on the wolf policy lead role. Wanted to talk just a little bit about Initiative 594. You'll recall that in the November elections, the voters enacted 594, and it concerns background checks and firearm sales and transfers. It became effective here just a week or so ago on December 4th. And so we had some significant concerns as to how that would impact our hunter education program and whether or not we fell as an agency under the exemption that's associated with enforcement entities. So we engaged with our Attorney General's office representatives and looked at it. We assessed the potential effects on our staff that are issued firearms in the course of their duties. Of course, our hunter education program, our instructors, our prospective students. And let me just briefly summarize what I-594 requires. It requires that all firearm sales or transfers in Washington be subject to background checks and be made through licensed dealers unless specifically exempted. The initiative exempts all law enforcement agencies from the background check transfer requirement, and as WDFW is a general law enforcement authority agency under RCW 10.93.020, we are therefore exempt from the requirement. Any firearms purchased, sale, or transfer to or from WDFW or DFW employees when acting within the scope of their authority is exempt from the background check transfer requirement in I-594. Our Hunter Education Program is a program that's authorized, obviously administered by WDFW, authorized pursuant to a different statute, 7732.155. Hunter Education instructors, when in formal volunteer status, so they sign up as volunteers with us, therefore take on the same status as if they were an employee with respect to us covering their activities. And so they would be acting within the scope of that authority for purposes of our Hunter Education Program and act on behalf of the department and therefore are exempt from the background check transfer requirements. That was the conclusion reached by the AGs in reviewing I-594 and its effect on our employees, including our Hunter Education instructors. There's also a number of other effects that affect some of our stakeholders. We're doing our best to make sure that we're up to date on what those are, so as we receive questions about it, we're able to answer them, provided we have the certainty of the information in response to their question. So moving on to another topic.
Commissioner Holtzmiller.
There again, there's a lot more about this that I don't know than I do know, but on a person under 18 in possession of a gun, and there again, I guess it's just one of those things that I would like to throw some of this stuff out, and hopefully you can report back to us, because in my part of the world, that is a major concern, because, it's just the redneck nature, I guess. We all have guns in our rigs, and kids are driving rigs. And the biggest part of it is most of the law enforcement in my part of the world are game wardens running around, and I'm really concerned it's going to put our wardens in some really bad situations and out hunting and everything else. So I guess I just wanted to pose this concern to you, and hopefully you can report back to us so that we can talk to our legislators and those kind of things with some information that's correct.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll hook up with you offline, Commissioner Holtzmiller, and make sure I understand exactly what your question is and do my best to get you an answer.
Okay.
But down in your part of the world was where my next topic was, reporting on our Assotin County Lands Committee meeting that we had just last week. We met in Clarkston back on the 2nd of December. You'll recall we established this group, it's been about a year ago. Coming up on it, in large part in response to concerns we were hearing from the local community about not only future potential acquisitions, but as much so about how we were managing the lands that we did have within the county, which is a significant amount. And so we brought together, thanks to Commissioner Holtzmiller and others, Commissioner Brian Shin, County Commissioner Brian Shin, help pull this group of folks together. There's about eight of us or so, nine of us. We did a tour, a day-long tour over there last summer, and we've been working together to try to figure out a way that we can respond to some of the concerns over there. So this was a continuing part of that process. So we discussed several next steps aimed at making sure that part of DFW lands management strategy includes keeping working lands working. We had received a number of suggestions from our work group members as to how we might go about doing that. And I've been very much wanting to ensure that all of the time and effort that people were putting into this committee actually resulted in some changes and some progress in that regard. So we agreed to take the next steps to move forward on three different proposals identified previously by our committee and had been evaluated by our regional staff, including developing protocols for an agricultural lease. We have a piece of ground there, and we're going to work with several members of the committee to develop the specifics of that lease, agricultural lease proposal, with the idea of having that done with a lease ready to go by the middle of March. We're also looking at a lease on a piece for some grazing. And again, we have another member of our, two of our members of our committee that are going to work together with our regional staff to put together the protocols associated with that piece. And then finally, we have a proposal for a forest thinning project designed to reduce the impacts associated with fire and to improve forest health. That's a little bit longer one. The first two, we're going to try to get on the ground, get the lease out by March, so that we can actually start making progress and having those activities take place on those lands. So, felt pretty good about our meeting and about actually we're going to show something. We're going to show some results for our time. A lot more to do beyond that, but some good first steps. Switching gears now to the Wanapum Dam. So they've completed the partial refill. Of course, this is Grant County Public Utility District. Of course, we had the break in the dam. I'm forgetting now how long ago that was. 7 months ago, I believe it was. One of the spillways had a 65-foot crack in it. They've been working ever since. Of course, we had the big drawdown that you're all very much familiar with. And so they completed the repairs. They did a partial refill, completed that again on the 1st of December. So the four-bay elevation operating range is now between 558 and 562 feet above mean sea level. Typically, they had been at an operational level of 570 feet, so they're not quite there, but getting close. So they'll leave it at that point for a while, make sure all of the repairs are performing as expected. Have a couple of outstanding concerns relative. We still have a significant amount of shoreline of riverbed that's exposed as a result of us being at 558 instead of 570. So we still have some concerns with a couple of sites relative to cultural resources. And we have a couple of, we have several different concerns about some boat access sites. Two of them are ours. Two of them we did some substantial repair work on. And part of that is to put some concrete netting type material that is below the concrete launchway that trailers would be supported on. That lower area is still exposed, and it's primarily to shield the bottom from prop wash rather than being designed to support the weight of trailers. So we're going to keep those closed until we get the level of the water back up far enough where we don't have to have concerns about the investment that we made to improve those launches be lost as a result. Closer to home here in Olympia, we've been working both here at headquarters as well as regional directors with our outreach and coordination effort in terms of both informing as well as getting feedback on our two fee packages for commercial and recreational license fees. We've had meetings in Wenatchee. We've had meetings in Tri-Cities over in Spokane and in Auburn with different sport groups here over the last month or so. Not surprising, we're getting a mix of reactions, both supportive as well as expressing concern with the structure of the packages. So it's going to be important that we remain adaptive as we move through the legislative session, being prepared to look for ways to improve the package in a manner that both continues to produce the amount of revenue that we're seeking, which Those two pieces are about combined for about $6.4 million, while at the same time being responsive to concerns about how the packages are designed and structured. So we're continuing to work on that. We've also got some relatively positive news on the federal budget front. The salmon management activity line item, which is in NOAA's budget, Mitchell Act and Pacific Salmon Commission funding for the states is in that line item. It is at $30.2 million, which essentially is what it was last year. So at that level, you may recall that we had an $800,000 reduction in support for our Mitchell Act hatcheries. That was absorbed by cutting production in several hatcheries below Bonneville Dam. So I'm fully anticipating that in the absence of our fee bills passing, which are designed to partially backfill that loss, that we would be that those that reduction in production would continue into the next year as a result of us being flat funded on that line item. But that also is good news on the Pacific Salmon Commission front, because within that $30.2 million, a portion of that is for the state's funding through the Pacific Salmon Commission. And you may recall we had a monitoring and sampling gap that resulted from the loss of coated wire tag improvement of funds. It's called QUITED is the acronym, through the Pacific Salmon Commission. So having this at level funding from last year, even though the QUITED piece within the treaty expired after this year, the money's still there. So we're going to be able to roll that money into the what we call the LOA account, the letter of agreement account. And so that gap for us is going to be absorbed by as a result. So that's good news there. Some other quick things. On our JEA, our Joint Enforcement Agreement, that is essentially at the same level as it was last year. So out of $108 million that's spread across all of the, I don't know if it goes to all 50 states, but a large portion of them, we get about $820,000, so we would expect to get that money again. That's primarily used in Puget Sound. Canadian Border Patrol work comes from that JEA, and also the coastal fishery enforcement, where we're working on enforcing federal regulations outside 3 miles, is the other place that money is utilized. Of course, our Pacific Coast Salmon Recovery Fund, the acronym PACSURF, is at $65 million, which is level funded from last year. You may recall that the House had a number in there of $35 million. And the president was at 50, the Senate was at 65. The House finally got, thanks to Jamie Butler Hansen, she got that back up to 65 in the House, and that's the way it looks. It'll come out of there. You'll recall that the majority of that goes for salmon habitat protection and restoration. Of that amount, about $24 million comes to the state. Out of that, $17 to $18 million is for habitat restoration and protection. And then the balance is split between, not equally, but the balance goes to the tribes and to the department. We get about $2 million out of that. So that should be about the same here this next year. Habitat conservation and restoration item for large-scale habitat restoration could benefit our Skagit estuary system. Actually got bumped up a little bit by $5 million from $20 to $25 million. So we should get a piece of that. The rest of the categories, and I've got a little handout I'll share with you that's got some of these numbers on it and what those funds are being used for. But the rest of it is pretty much the same. Puget Sound Geographic Program got a $3 million bump that you'll see here. It's part of the National Estuary Program, supports marine and nearshore protection programs administered by WDFW through our habitat program. So all in all, pretty good. out of the federal side in comparison to some of the things we are looking at and ringing warning bells about here not too long ago coming out of sequestration.
Dr. Anderson, you're going to hand out that?
I am, yeah.
Okay. Good.
If I hand it out now, you'll be distracted, though, from what else I say. Listen to me.
I'm watching the movie.
And then on the governor's budget front, we're expecting the governor's budget to come out next week. The first budget will be what the, you know, is called a book one budget, level balanced budget with no new revenue. There'll be a book two budget. Whether or not it comes out with book one or shortly thereafter, we really don't know yet, but it's the book. We'll be looking closely at the book two budget, and we're hoping to see that next week as well. So we'll see how that comes out and where we go from there. Of course, in the meantime, legislature's been in town. They had legislative committee week week before last, so we've had a fair opportunity to get our legislative package in front of legislators. As I've reported previously, wolf management continues to be a pot item with a number of key legislators, and what we're doing relative to our Willapa Bay policy is also a pretty hot item in some circles. So there are some people suggesting that how we come out in our budget in some ways depends on how we do in those two different arenas. So we'll keep you informed as we go. Changing gears here, you'll recall that we had a meeting with a number of our recreational stakeholders back on August 5th. There were a number of things that we agreed to do on both sides, and I just wanted to report on a couple of those items that we've recently followed up on. So we held a meeting here last week on December 4th. We had two meetings during that day. One of the morning is essentially meeting with NOAA, talking about HGMP's approval, staffing, that whole piece. And then the afternoon, we had Mike Grossman from the AG's office come in, and we spent a lot of time talking about North Falcon and USV Washington. So our first meeting with NOAA included some of their key leadership, Bob Turner and his group. I think there was general agreement that we have a crisis in terms of the number of HGMPs that need review and approval, and the risk that is posed to our future hatchery leases and subsequent fisheries that depend on them in the absence of them being permitted. We left with an 8-point plan designed to increase the review and approval capacity of NOAA fisheries through a cooperative approach that includes sharing of resources. That means sharing of resources between the department and NOAA fisheries, added human capacity wherever we can do it, that's the most that we can do in the most timely fashion, and then also utilizing third-party expertise through the Hatchery Scientific Review Group as a means of both review and bolstering the plan and enhancing its defensibility. So appreciated Commissioners Mankin and Carpenter joining us for that conversation that day, and Commissioner Schmitten, excuse me. But I'm the key is now taking what we did, which is essentially we've got about 113 HGMPs. We have within our settlement agreement with the Wild Fish Conservancy, we've got essentially 2.5 years from essentially May 2014 that we've got a time period in which to try to get this work done before and an agreement not to sue us during that time frame. I think it's fair to say that there isn't any way we're going to get that NOAA is going to work their way through all 113 and get them approved, but there are some that are less vulnerable to litigation than others. Chum in particular, Chum Hatchery production. Not all of them, but some of them. So what we're doing is we're going to work with the tribes, as we've already done, but we want to make sure that we've got these 113 prioritized by their relative importance to the fisheries, their relative risk from a litigation perspective, and we'll be able to group some of those or put them in batches, as we're calling them, so that certain groups of those HGMPs can go through a common review process, so they're not each going through a separate process, and then draw a line. And if there's 113, if the line's at 80 or 60 or wherever it is, that those above the line are the ones that we're really going to focus our efforts on. What is the capacity from a human resource perspective to get those reviewed within the time frame that we have? What's the capacity that we have? What's the gap, and how do we fill it so that we can achieve our goal of getting those HGMPs through the process in that time frame? So that's essentially the 8-part plan, and I think the meeting was well received by NOAA, and I think there's certainly a willingness on their part to work collaboratively, and of course this will includes the tribes for sure as we work through this. So the second part of our day, as I mentioned, included Mike Gross from the AG's office and the three commissioners and DFW staff and recreational representatives to discuss the North of Falcon process, how fish are allocated pursuant to USV Washington and USV Oregon, and what it would mean to our fisheries if we were unsuccessful in securing a state-tribal agreement through the North Falcon process. So that was kind of the three parts that we talked about. In many respects, I thought the discussion followed closely the discussion we had at our August 5th meeting, not surprising, perhaps, regarding the allocation issues, state-tribal allocation issues, as well as a series of scenarios that might result in the absence of an agreement. I think we all gained a little better understanding of the issues and consequences of failing to reach agreement. And so I think that will help inform us, and as we contemplate the packages that we consummate through the North Falcon process, so that when we get to the end of that process, what's that agreement look like? Is it something that, if we find unacceptable, is not reaching an agreement and the consequences that go with that something, a pathway we would want to go? So good discussion, and I think it was informative. And I think it will better prepare everyone for this upcoming North Falcon process. One other important piece is I've been working with Chief Crown, and we are making an adjustment in the organization of the enforcement program, which will include the reestablishment of a Region 6 captain. You may or may not be aware that about 2 years ago we made a change whereby a portion of Region 6 came under the responsibility of the Region 5 captain that's located in Vancouver, and a portion of it went into a Marine division. So I didn't think that was working very well, and it left in some cases Region 6 without representation not only at their senior staff level, but within the regional office. The captain is whatever that is, 2 hours away in Vancouver. There's also, in my view, a need to ensure that we have the command and control over the officers that are in the Marine detachments that do a lot of work in wildlife enforcement and shellfish enforcement, and that they're whereby the razor clams had been taken by some more of the land-based folks. But we continue to have a lot of overlap between the Marine folks doing wildlife enforcement in October, November, December, whereas in the summer they're primarily working on marine issues. And at the same time, we have the terrestrial folks doing a lot of work in the marine environment during the summer when we have a lot of fishing activity going on. So getting that back into an organizational structure where we had both marine and terrestrial types of work under a common command and control structure was important to me, as well as Chief Crown. So we have the recruitment is open for that captain's position. I'm hoping that we will be able to make a selection by the 1st of January or so and have the new organization and the new captain in place by the middle of January. In terms, you may also recall we changed the organizational structure at the leadership level, where we have two deputy chiefs, Deputy Chief Sensi, Deputy Chief Hobbs. So Deputy Chief Sensi will have the western regions of 4, 5, and 6. Hobbs will have 1, 2, and 3. And Deputy Chief Sensi will have the Special Investigative Unit, SIU unit, and Mike Hobbs will have duties associated with hiring and recruitment as part of his portfolio as well. So we can show you the new org structure here with an enforcement committee, but I'm pretty happy with this change, and I think it's going to bode well for the enforcement program as well as the department.
Oh, Director Anderson, while you're talking about enforcement, we did have a member of the public talk about the absence of enforcement on the Olympic Peninsula. Do you happen to know if that's accurate? Or?
Well, I do know that the officer that we had there was a candidate for a sergeant's position, which he was successful in competing for.
That's Officer Fairbanks?
Fairbanks. Mm-hmm. And so we're in the process of filling that North Coast position.
Okay.
I don't know the exact status of that. I can find that out for you.
Great.
But obviously it's a very important position, mm-hmm. And it's not something we'll leave vacant any longer than absolutely necessary. And in the meantime, we'll be covering that with folks both out of Port Angeles as well is Aberdeen. So the Region 6, that's obviously all within Region 6, are going to help fill in the gaps with that vacancy during the interim period.
Thank you.
Okay. I think the last item is wolves. As usual, there's been quite a bit of activity on the wolf front. So let me just walk through a couple of these things. I went through some of this information in November, so I'm going to abbreviate a couple of these pieces. So our wolf population monitoring activities. So you recall that obviously in the winter months here, as we get snow on the ground, we begin surveying all the packs and areas of where we have suspected pack activity, using a variety of tools, everything from fixed wings to helicopters to people on the ground, using howling surveys to try to estimate the minimum number of wolves and the number of wolves in each pack that we have. as well as looking for the number of confirmed packs and the successful breeding pairs. So out of this work, we'll get that information. We're also coordinating with tribal biologists to ensure that we understand what they have for wolf counts on tribal reservations. And then we'll be summarizing this information, providing it not only to the commission but to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on or about March 15th. We've touched on our female wolf there at Ruby Creek, still finding that animal pretty elusive in terms of our work to try to capture it. We've had traps out. We've had a cougar cage trap out, left opens just to see if we could get her to come into that. She wasn't particularly interested in that. We've tried some free range darting. The reports back I got were that we came close. I don't know if we fired a shot and missed it, but was close, or whether we got close to shooting, but we didn't. But so we're going to keep trying. We're using this free-range darting thing, and if that fails, maybe we'll have to consider a helicopter. I hope not, because it's expensive. And I don't mean to make light of it. We need to get that animal captured, but when I hear people talk about we're just going to go out and capture these things and move them or do whatever, obviously capturing wolves is not as easy as it sounds. So over in Whitman County, of course, we had a wolf mortality there that was reported to us back in October 12th. We had department officers respond. In mid-November, we received results from we were able to get the animal. We sent it down to the genetics lab or portions of the animal down to the genetics lab to ensure that it was, in fact, a pure wolf and not a hybrid, in which it was a pure wolf. We also completed the necropsy. And then on November 19th, our enforcement officers forwarded the case package to the Whitcomb County prosecutor for his deliberations. There were substantial probable cause for two violations, both including the taking of a state-listed species and negligently shooting from a roadway. So with cases like this, we, by providing the case report to the prosecutor, allows them to take the lead on determining what the appropriate charges are after reviewing the information that we provide them. So it will be up to the prosecutor to make the ultimate charging decision, if any. On the wolf-livestock conflict front, we're initiating a pilot program I'm pretty excited about. So it's a collaboration between livestock producers in Northeast Washington, and it's called a deterrence plan to reduce wolf-livestock conflict. The key component of this approach and what makes it different from other approaches is the deterrence plan process is a collaborative process with a team of local producers that brainstorm with our conflict specialists to identify the appropriate non-lethal measures that are expected to be effective in a particular area given the surrounding environment, including landscape conditions and livestock operations. So rather than, you know, a one-size-fits-all or, you know, we've got a suite of potential non-lethal actions that may be available, trying to tailor the non-lethal actions we have to the particular set of circumstances. And I think having livestock operators in there being a part, a key part, and in large part driving the group pulled some pretty good promise for getting some more collaboration between us and the livestock operators, as well as picking the non-lethal measures that have the most likelihood of success. So congrats to the wildlife staff that have been working with the livestock operators up there and kind of coming up with this little bit different approach. We've got a couple of places, the key places that are that are kind of hot zones, the Smackout, Huckleberry, and then the Profanity Peak areas, and that's where we're putting our efforts first, where we think we've got the highest potential for conflict. And then here more recently, on the 5th of December, DFW staff investigated a reported wolf depredation that resulted in a final determination of a probable wolf kill of a sheep in Whitman County. It occurred in a pastured area that's like 330 acres of stubble wheat, as I understand it. There were about 1,200 sheep. It was enclosed by an electrified multi-wire and mesh perimeter fence, and the hot wire, I can't say with certainty, but there was some suspicion that the hot wire may not have been operational on Thursday night. The producer also uses 3 guard dogs, and staff worked with the producer to get the fence back online quickly. We also installed that device called a fox light. If you'll recall, that was a fox light was one of the non-lethal tools that the conservation community thought we should have used in the Huckleberry Pack situation. And so they provided them, wanted to make sure we used them there. So they provide random flashes of blue and white light to simulate having that there's human presence. So there's some of those been deployed. And then the producer typically moves his sheep about this time of year to a pasture that's close to his house. That pasture also has a mesh fence around it. We're going to work with him in terms of putting the turbo flattery around the fenced area as well. So that's kind of the status of that event. There was some, there may have been some significant criticism that we weren't able to make it a confirmed wolf kill. Rather, it was probable. And we got to let the evidence that we have drive our decision that it was very probably a wolf, but we just didn't have some of the key indicators on the carcass that could get us to a confirmed kill. But we're not trying to not come to that conclusion when the evidence supports it, but we just didn't have it in a conclusive way. I reported on the wolf research panel last time that was at our last commission meeting that was held back on October 29th. There has been, at that meeting, we had Dr. Rob Wilgus report on one of his studies, and that has gotten quite a bit of press here lately, and it's an association between lethal removal and wolves and what happens to future depredations events with livestock. We're looking at that closely. It's gotten quite a bit of press. Just wanted to call your attention to that. Provide the full commission or talk specifically to the Wildlife Committee more about that when we further digested it and have some thoughts about where there are some next steps. From our perspective, it was an interesting compilation of data, but I think there's some additional work that needs to be done before we get to a point where we can reach any conclusions from our perspective at least. As I also reported last time, we're in the process of the terms for our wolf advisory group members are expiring, and so we've been out soliciting request a re-up to stay on the committee or look at new members as well. I think we've had about 50 people apply, so lots of folks interested. And as I mentioned last time, we are considering expanding the number of the group a little bit. It's 9 right now. We may go up to as many as 12. We just want to make sure that we've got adequate representation of all the interests on the group, and so we'll be taking a close look at that. And then we've also been pursuing a contract with Human Wildlife Conflict Collaboration to evaluate our efforts, the department's efforts, to develop a collaborative and public understanding of the implementation of our wolf conservation management plan. The assessment will have an emphasis on how we can improve the wolf advisory group, the function of the group, ensure that if we have agreements, that there are agreements that last over time, build capacity and trust to reach agreement on future management issues. And so that assessment is scheduled to start toward the end of January.
And what is the organization's name that's doing that?
Human Wildlife Conflict Collaboration.
And where do you know, happen to know where they're out of?
University of...
Is that? Francine Madden.
Yeah.
She's from the Midwest.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. I've heard the name before.
Okay.
And before Commissioner Kaney, I just want to thank you because this is something that I feel we should have done maybe a little sooner is bring in some outside expertise and just to deal with the facilitation issues. The human dimensions of the conflict have just been staggeringly important. So I'm so
happy.
We're
doing two things, and they're so, and they are very separate. One is to have a facilitator with the Wolf Advisory Group, which we brought an independent department person in to do that, which helped a lot. Rob Geddes, I think. We're going to take that a step farther, and then this process is expensive. It's expensive.
Expensive. Yeah, we heard it.
Yeah. And but we think it's a good investment. We've been working. We're being encouraged, I think I could say, by the governor's office, J.T. Austin in particular, to do this, as well as some legislators have some interest in us doing this. And if it can help us understand how we can do get better results with education, collaboration, get some coalesce around some paths forward, it'll be money well invested.
I agree. So. Great. Commissioner Kinney?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to thank you too, Director. I think we took that first visit to Montana early on, and we heard from their commission. I can't remember which commissioner said, the biology is easy around wolves. The social aspect, you better get ahead of it because it'll eat you alive. So this is, I think, movement in the right direction. And then I had a quick question on the wolves that are turning up dead. Is there a DNA check? It'd be, I think, somewhat interesting or at least maybe even telling, for instance, like where did the wolf from Whitman County come from? Was it a dispersal out of the Blues or was it a dispersal out of Tianway pack? We know they can travel such large distances. I think maybe some of those answers as to even the huckleberry female, you know, that death probably led to some dispersal, and where are they ending up, you know, as they get out into other areas and get into trouble or get killed or whatnot? Is there a fairly good DNA tracking going on?
I don't know. Do you know any?
Commissioner Holtzmiller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, there again, to agree with what Jay's saying, because a friend of mine has a place on the Palouse, and he's been seeing wolves there for about 3 or 4 years, and we always just figured they were Idaho wolves coming in. And wouldn't it be beneficial to be able to track these? How much more expensive is that test, Nate?
It's not that expensive, and where we found it's just pretty likely that those wolves that we're picking up in eastern Washington are, you know, right from next door, you know, northern Rocky Mountain camps with this oxygen palace. Been in that Cascades where we've been looking at the two different subspecies and looking at the intermixing between Eulis and oxygen palace.
But the key with the SNPs analysis, so you have to have a baseline first. I mean, it's not going to tell you anything if you don't have a baseline. So I don't know what the existence of that baseline is to do that genetic sampling that would tell you whether, you know, it was came from Huckleberry or the one in Whitman came from. So we'll check that out and see what tools there are available to do that.
Thank you.
So I think that completes my director's report. I was thinking about Commissioner Caney's. You know, I think that I remember full well, if you don't get out ahead of it, it'll eat you alive. And sometimes I think even being ahead of it, depending on how fast you're running, you may be a good thing, may not, you know. But because they're, even if you're ahead of them, they may be catching you. And I think in this case, you know, we have not been able to find the right combination yet to get that degree of social tolerance, acceptability, the balance of the understanding of what wolf management means in terms of having a sustainable population of wolves, minimizing wildlife or wolf conflicts with livestock, ungulate populations. It's that fourth goal, as you correctly point out, that achieving that social tolerance for what it takes from a management perspective to achieve those three goals that is the most difficult.
Thank you. Any other questions for the director? Deputy Director Storr, no PowerPoint?
No, Madam Chair, nothing for you today.
He doesn't like PowerPoint. Okay. I'm just out of curiosity, because we have a minute, Deputy Director Storr, did you plan on giving us a budget report next meeting, or is it on a quarterly basis that we hear the budget reports? And
yeah, what I'd hope to do next meeting is touch on the governor's budget, because okay. We should have book one and book two in hand and some analysis done, and then also update on our revenue collection.
Okay, so. Great.
Just perfect. Wasn't timely today.
Good. Yeah. Director?
Well, Anderson? I mean, we're going to, once we get, especially the, well, once we get the governor's budgets, we're going to be doing some turning around and analysis on those as kind of quick as we can. And so you can expect to get an email from us so you have an understanding of what that looks like in advance of the January meeting.
Good. Okay. Thank you.